Thank you for joining me on another episode of She Leads Now podcast, where we help career and entrepreneurial women gain the tools to develop a success mindset, create winning strategies, build collaborative relationships, and take bold action towards creating impact and fulfillment in their lives and careers. I'm your host, Sabine Gideon, and I'm on a mission to awaken and activate women and emerging leaders so they can tap into their innate leadership ability, elevate their influence, and create the impact they were destined to make. If you're ready to uplevel your confidence, courage, and influence, you've come to the right place. Join me weekly for insights, strategies, and resources to help you grow, develop, and embody the leader you were meant to be, so that you can make the impact you know you are called to make and establish the legacy you've always dreamed. The world eagerly awaits the emergence of your brilliance, impact, and influence. So with that, let's dive into this week's episode. Hello and welcome to She Leads Now, with the focus being on leadership in action. I'm excited. I'm Sabine Gideon. If you're completely new to me, I'm the CEO of Gideon Enterprises. I wear many, many different hats, but most of all, my most favorite hat is being able to support people in their personal and professional transformations. And today I have with me the amazing and trailblazing Michelle Hayward. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Sabine. I can hear the roars and the claps and applause coming from the stands and the fans everywhere around the world.
Absolutely. I hear it too. Real quick, for those of you who don't know about Michelle, I'm just going to read off her bio and then we'll do a little bit of housekeeping and get into this discussion today. So Michelle is the founder and CEO of Positive Hire, a company that is revolutionizing recruitment and retention by matching diverse talent with companies that align with their career goals. Positive Hire's SaaS platform, PH Balance, teaches engineering construction companies how to use a data-driven talent marketplace to retain and develop underrepresented employees. So with that, welcome to the show, Michelle. So excited to have this conversation, learn more about what you've been up to, the changes in the market. But before we get into that, if you would just share with the audience real quick as a reminder, the amazingness that is you, your background, and what you're doing today.
Long story short, I don't say I'm a recovering civil engineer anymore, but I built the power grid. So when you have electricity, not when you don't, just only when you have it, think of me and not GE, I give you light. But also there are so many women, Black, Latina, and Indigenous, Native in the U.S., that do work every day around infrastructure. So your highways, your water, facilities, buildings, they literally design, construct, and manage these facilities. So don't always think technology. Think about the things you actually need before you can even turn on your router or your computer and Wi-Fi. And there are people that are actually building that on a regular basis. So that's what I want to drop there. Just a reminder.
Awesome. So as we think about, you know, we were talking about this in the green room, so to speak, you know, you've been in this space for a very long time, having learned more about you, you've been accustomed to being the first and being the only in many of the environments that you've been in. You know, now that we're in this space where we're still unsettled. I mean, we talked last year initially, but this year we're still at the place of unsettlement. And actually, that's even changing a bit more. You know, how does the work that you're doing at Positive Hire, what are you seeing in terms of trends in the STEM space, in the construction space, around diverse hires, around decisions that organizations are making around diverse hires and creating more inclusive cultures?
So
it's a loaded question, I know.
I know. And I would love to say there is so much change going on. And what I will say, there is some change going on. So what we saw during the pandemic, or let's say the latter part of 2020 until about mid of 2022, was a lot of organizations hyper-focused on diversity recruitment, but not so much culture change and how to retain the talent they have. And so what I loved about that that time period was how many Black women and Latinas that were getting promoted and opportunities to lead organizations. On the back end, though, like I led in with, the cultures hadn't changed in those organizations or really hadn't changed enough. And so a lot of what I spent time talking about last year, which is what we started seeing the trend of end of last year, as well as into this year, is the glass cliff phenomenon. And what happens is, during the pandemic, there were some certain opportunities that were afforded to underrepresented women because white men didn't take them. And so now you may have noticed Roz Brewer, who is the outgoing CEO of Walgreens, now leaving. And so she can't legally talk about what happens because that was negotiated in her contract, as they do with executives when things may not go as planned. But what we've also seen in other instances where there's middle management roles on up, where women of color, underrepresented women, have taken management roles and now are being removed. And so the glass cliff, they were set up for failure. And so we think about going through the glass ceiling, but what happens when you, once you get through the ceiling, you're standing on that glass still, right? And it's slippery. It doesn't have a lot of traction. And what does it really look like? And so it's really important to congratulate the women, but also be a safety net for them. And so you want to track and look at organizations, especially if you're looking at taking a job there, who are women that were recently bought in? And oftentimes you can use LinkedIn for that to see what roles they were brought in and how long did they stay, number one, in leadership roles, especially in engineering, science, executive level roles, maybe non-technical roles, number one. The other part of that would be, and we're going to, is also how often your DEI people are flipping over. And so that's a whole other discussion to get into, but really focusing on that glass cliff aspect for technical women. So our scientists, engineers, technology, IT people, data analytics, data scientists, to really also look what is going on in that technical space as well as leaders. So that's, I want to say it's better. It was better for hiring purposes, but on the retention side, we haven't seen as much great performance and consistency across most employers.
Mm-hmm. Are these, is the attrition voluntary, or are they kind of like, oh, well, we're not seeing the results we were hoping we'd see, so here's a package?
So some of it is negotiated. And so literally a year ago, I did a webinar on the glass cliff and said, hey, you need to negotiate an exit strategy. And so if they're negotiating an exit strategy, they still can't legally talk about what happened. So you won't always know. Sometimes you're trying to guess the gap, but then on LinkedIn, but some people know it's easier to get hired when you have a job or it looks like you have a job than if you don't. And so it's harder to tell in that aspect, just looking at it. But from speaking from people, it is not voluntary. It is being more strategic about the moves they make, having to make quickly to exit an organization. So some HR people like, hey, just let them push you out, put you on a PIP so you can get unemployment and you can get a severance package. But there are certain states also wherein it is a work at will state, so they don't really have to have a reason to let you go. And then you having an EEOC case takes time and also information. And it takes a lot of energy and money to be able to fight that case. And so it's nuances in there. So it takes more of having private conversations and disclosure. And so I would say it is more of exiting strategically so you can pay your bills, but also understanding you still have power if you're in an environment that is not welcoming, where they're literally trying to get rid of you. Do not think you don't have power. You still very much have power, even though they're trying to push you out.
Yeah, yeah. And you brought up Roz Brewer, and I actually just did a post last week as I was talking through about gender equity at the leadership level. Now that my book, Leadership Reloaded, has officially been released, And, you know, in even in the book during the research, like I realized that there were only at the time, I think 53 or 52 women who held, you know, CEO roles at the large Fortune 500. She was one of two Black women. Now there's only one that's left, and obviously fewer women. And so we're while we see the numbers are obviously ridiculously low, I'm starting to see a trend where in some organizations that they are that there are, I guess, enough pipelines built where women are taking the next CEO roles. As you're having conversations, especially in an industry like construction and even in STEM overall, you know, what are the internal barriers? I mean, you probably could spend an hour here, but what have you diagnosed as, you know, really truly the barrier or a set of barriers that are keeping people stuck, or, you know, that invisible wall, if you will, to be able to climb that? Is it lack of social capital? Is it really systemic things that are put in place in the organization? Like, can we name what two or three of these challenges or these walls really are and what they represent?
I was having a conversation this summer about this. And I want to go back to something that I think a lot of people don't realize. When you look at TV shows and movies, most of the lines are for male characters. Unless it is a women's driven TV show, the largest percentage of all the lines will be spoken by men. And when you poll men about what percentage of movies characters say what amount of the lines, they will highly say women speaking way more than they actually are on camera during the TV shows and movies. And you're like, Michelle, what does this have to do with corporate America? What you often see in corporate America is that if one woman makes it, she's a CHRO as an executive. Well, see, we're diverse, and that's all they care about. Oh, we have a Black man. Oh, well, see, we're diverse. But the other 38 executive VPs and C-suite levels, CIOs, CTO, everybody else still a white man. But long as you have one or two, that's all you need. And so they've reached that benchmark and that level and that goal. And that's really all they're about. It's not about what does equity look like? What does sustainable diverse equity inclusion look like? What we're seeing is they really don't care. Long as it's optical that they've made some change and it's not all white male. That's the first issue, is the lack of self-awareness that the executive teams really have. And so when we go back and we talk about diversity, equity, inclusion in the workplace overall, what we find is executive teams, especially pre the murder of George Floyd, were not doing self-work. It was, oh, we bring in a chief diversity officer, a CDO, whatever. And it is literally, they're pushing off the work that they need to do themselves on an internal role, which generally has a smaller staff, right? Let's say on a corporate side, for a lot of large Fortune 500, they have a team of four people and they will have the smallest budget. And even though it's called a chief diversity officer, they're not considered part of the C-suite, right? And so they have very, very limited power, but they have to take all the, it just reminds me of project management. Project managers have the responsibility for a full project, but they have none of the power over engineering, design, or supply chain. They can't control any of those groups, but they have to deliver a project. And so it goes back to your other question, like, what is the influence that you also have? And so the influence that you have to have within an organization can help as well. But what I often see is you will see women, and often in an organization, make it to like a senior director, or maybe a VP role, and then everything else breaks apart. Like, you'll see very few at that level, and then nobody else rises above. And that woman or women will sit there for years at that level. And you will see men coming in and out of the organization, coming in at higher levels. And the org seems like, well, we don't know where we can find more women. And there was a study that Women in Technology International did back in the 90s, specifically for the tech industry, wherein the company said, well, we don't know where to find women to promote. It's like, well, Sally's been here for 12 years. It's like, what? Who's Sally? The computer engineer that you bought in as straight out of college from whatever college. Oh, well, what about, and it would name women that had been there for 10 plus years. They didn't see them. They had never internally looked for talent, try to develop their women talent to go into these roles. And so the change on an individual level, then on a cultural level within the organizations are still very, very much broken. Before we can even talk about sometimes what the women need to do, oftentimes we push back on how we need to change. Oh, we need to speak a certain way. We need to wear our hair a certain way. We need to dress. That's not it. The people that need to change have not changed in the last, or not a large enough numbers have not changed in order to really change the culture. And so that's where I would say the change needs to come more is from the leadership than it does from the women and other underrepresented people.
Yeah, those are really great points. As I was doing research from the book, there are like, you know, multiple studies from like Pew, Lean In, and all these other sources. And, you know, when they polled the executives at the very top of these like larger organization, and I'm not saying that this is a valid defense by any means, but a lot of them really were going off of the assumption that there was diversity across the organization. Now, how that happens, right, is beyond me, whether or not the information that is being fed up to them is being fed to them in a certain way, or, you know, the narrative that they're getting by the time they get the narrative, it sounds like, oh yeah, things are moving. So I almost wonder how much of what we're seeing today and some of this slow movement is not because they don't necessarily care or are not self-aware. It's they're not going to be in like Workday or whatever. They're not going to be digging for this information. So they rely on what's being fed to them. So I'm wondering how much of it is just individuals not feeling comfortable or being scared or whatever term you want to use to say, no, we really have a problem, whatever the name is, versus, hey, here's the progress we've made.
So the CEOs being separated from the organization, and truly that's their call to do that. You will find very few CEOs that literally travel to locations to talk to individual contributors or different staff, and whether they work on a sales floor, doing inbound or outbound sales calls to manufacture, they make those decisions. That's not who they're going to engage with. And so number one, that's their responsibility on how they run an organization. But a lot of times they're like, oh, but I delegated that out, but it's still your responsibility, number one. Number two is they're looking at the stakeholders and what they promised them to deliver it. And to them, DEI and diversity of their employee base doesn't always align to how they increase stock prices, they make more sales. They see those as separate things. And what we actually know is that's a lie. That is not how the world operates. And that's really not who you're selling. If you go to the hair products, you go to clothing industry, they know directly, oh, we can sell to people, but still in those organizations, they don't look like us, which is why you have bad H&M marketing programs that come out because they were not inclusive. And so oftentimes they are taking an approach that they know it all, because they think their education and their breed and their social status has given them a viewpoint of how to sell to and manage underrepresented people, when it has not. And so they need to take a step back and understand they have a huge gap in learning, because number one, the education that has been provided to them has been provided to them in a context where they were the knowledgeable ones, they were the leaders, which is not true history. And so that's why I go back, it's a lot of unlearning. Then when you look at what is reported, they're generally only reporting onto the metrics as which was included in their 10K report. Again, what the stakeholders and stockholders really wanted to see, but not in understanding you cannot get those results without the people in your organization. And so there's this huge gap, I would say, between classism and education that needs to be addressed that hasn't really been addressed. And so in those organizations, to me, it's a breakdown in responsibility, thinking just because you delegate something is going to happen. You still need to have checks and balances, and more CEOs need to be out, whether it's 1 week of a quarter, visiting different locations in their organizations to better understand what their employees need. And oftentimes, pre-COVID, when you had to be in front of people, when they were doing mass layoffs and they would call everybody into one room, or they would do all hands meeting, pretty much the only time you would see an executive, right? Otherwise, they were completely hands off. Oh, well, your manager to your manager to your manager will tell you that. And by the time you get it, it is very, very diluted. And it goes back to one of the very last calls I remember having in corporate. An email went out because we had been acquired like a year prior. Like, they hadn't done any calls with us a year since the acquisition. And so the email, like, hey, we're going to do an all hands call to discuss the state of the organization. Well, I never got anything else. Now, just for y'all to preference, I worked for an international company that was an engineering construction company. I was in the power group, so I was building transmission lines and substations. Well, the date came and went, so I hit reply all to internal email. Y'all know the rule, you don't ever do that. Like, do not play me. I think I'd asked somebody. Yeah, I had sent it to somebody. They're like, oh, well, we already had the call. It was only for internal people. That bet. I hit reply all. I said, field people were not invited to this. We still need to know what's going on in the organization. Because as a field person, I was billable hours. I made money for the company more than anybody that sat in the office unless they were a design engineer. My time, my vehicle, my per diem, all of that, the company got a cut of, right? Mm-hmm. And they hosted that call. That's all I'm saying. They hosted that call. People were emailing back directly like, you ain't missed nothing. They didn't say nothing. But the point was, you decided to host a call and you cut out people that don't even work in a physical office. Yeah. The most remote of remote people. And so when people say, oh, well, what should executives? Y'all not even hosting virtual calls and town halls with your people because you've delegated it so much. You have to show up and you have to engage. And that is still very much what we're seeing. They only are focused on what the stakeholders are saying, what the board is saying, and you have to still get out and touch the people. And I would say this is different too when you have a CEO than you have a CEO that was a founder, because they built something and they believe in it. And oftentimes you also have CEOs sometimes that come in that don't value people. They just like their work output. And when you have CEOs that value their people, they show up very differently. And mm-hmm. So founder CEOs and CEOs that value people have different types of organizations. They operate very differently. And you don't see that a lot in today's age when it comes to Fortune 500s. They're very, very much, the CEO's C-suite is very much removed from individual contributors and people that do the actual work.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I did a presentation on growth mindset not too long ago, going off of Carol Dweck's book. And, you know, she talked about Jack Welch. And of course, if you've read Winning or anything about him, right? Like a huge part of his success was the fact that he would walk the floors, he would have conversations, and he would implement and execute based on what it was that he learned. So it wasn't just a dog and pony show of, hey, I'm here at the plant, hello. So I think it's requiring leadership at all levels, executive down, to be more engaged and more involved and asking questions around what's working, what's not working before we're making these big decisions. And, you know, you keep highlighting a point that I think is very, very important to repeat here, is that as a leader in this time, maybe, you know, maybe 5 years ago or before that, it was okay for you to be removed and for you to sit at the throne, if you will, yeah. of the organization. But the shift in the demographics of the workforce in our society overall is requiring more engagement. It's requiring more of a human touch. As I was doing the research for the book, you know, 46% of Gen Z are, you know, from multiple different ethnic races. Like that's huge. Like that's the future of our workforce. And they're expecting for the company's values to align with their values. They're expecting to be seen, to be heard, to be recognized, their own unique experiences to be acknowledged. You can't do that sitting on, you know, the top floor of a building where your entire workforce feels disconnected to you. So I'm glad that we're having this conversation, that this goes beyond diversity, equity, and inclusion. Like obviously all of those components are important, but this is rooted in how are we treating other humans? How are we coming together? How are we engaging with each other? How are we communicating and showing respect and appreciation, if you will, basic things towards each other to fulfill whatever the organization's mission is? So I wanted to shift a little because we were talking about this before, you know, as it relates to sustainability, right? So we know, you know, based on DEI leaders, I think the report that I read this morning was about 300 in February, 300 DEI leaders were let go in some capacity or another. We're seeing less and less focus on, you know, diversity and inclusion and hires. I mean, there are organizations who are still very focused to that mission, which is great and awesome. But overall, you know, there are a lot that aren't. So as, you know, as we're looking ahead, we're in, you know, peak, we're at the time of this recording going into like a peak hiring season. Everybody's looking at budgets right now. They're trying to figure out what are we going to do for 2024? What did we meet our goals and whatnot? What is some advice that you have for the individual who is at the space of, you know what, I'm looking to advance my career. I want to be aligned with an organization that values me, that creates that space for me to bring my whole self and that I can contribute to. What advice are you giving to the individuals? And then we can speak to how does that then translate to what leadership needs to be focused on coming into the new year?
So I like LinkedIn. I know younger people don't. LinkedIn, for those of us that are around for the big recession of 2008, we understand why LinkedIn is so important to us. Like it's how I stayed employed, but it's really how some of us made it through that time. But what LinkedIn gives you a viewpoint is a couple things. Did they let go of their DEI people? How many did they let go, right? Did they let go of their ERG leaders and founders? That's huge. Like, so when you ask them like, oh, well, what about your ERG? Oh, well, it's not active right now. Why isn't that? We aren't sure. Like they giving you the runaround. You can go pull some of that information up. The next thing I would say to do is reach out to people that are currently working there or previously worked there to get their feedback on what is it like, especially if the organization has separate locations. Ask about specific locations in that you may work or maybe interviewing for. Maybe it's hybrid, remote. Still get a feel of how it's functioning. Some people have still not figured out how to manage remote teams or how to work in a hybrid environment. So you still want to ask those things as well. But also ask around, you know, sick leave, maternity leave, or hopefully it's paternity leave. What does that look like? And anything else that really directly pertains to your life, whether you maybe not have children or your children are older. So most of your time is caregiving for your parents, right? So there are just different things that you really need to ask and inquire about, and talking to different people at different levels and different locations can give you different vantage point of the organization. The last thing I will say is that job description is going to tell you everything more than you realize. Meaning, like if you got the job title, like go see if you can find that job title about the person that was in that role or other people that have been in that role. And you see they're leaving after like 6 months, 8 months. You might, you know what, hold up, wait a minute, this may not be it. But also in that job description, it's telling you within the first five or so, five, maybe seven, things that you really need to be cognizant of when it comes to that role. Also, if it's not very detailed, it's very wide, it's very generic, it lets you know they don't know what they really want. Somebody is confused in the organization, and you'll definitely find out if you decide to do an interview. In that interview process too, ask them like, I would like to speak to the person or people that previously held this role. And start asking them pointed questions about whether it's their ERGs, about their benefits, what is their viewpoint on X, Y, and Z. And so that also gives you an idea of what they're focused on overall holistically for their employees. And so there, those are the three things I really like. Look at LinkedIn, see who's left, DEI leaders, ERG leaders, look who's at executive level as far as diversity, if you can find it, because stock images be stock imaging on the websites, and definitely analyze that job description on a deeper level.
I love that. I love that. And for the leaders, and when I'm saying leaders in this particular context, I'm talking about the middle management leaders, like the ones who are carrying the burden. Yeah. And in some cases are the ones who are creating more of a gap, to be quite honest. So what are some of the things that, you know, looking ahead, these leaders should be thinking about as it relates to, you know, not just checking off a box around diverse hires, but really creating a sustainable, inclusive culture and environment for those who are coming into the workforce?
Identify your biases. When somebody calls you out on it, don't lash back. Instead, have a conversation, right? And ask them, what do they see as far as your biases? So that now you can keep those in check and really start changing that. Number two, putting in place checks and balances as well on how you deal with not only stressful issues, but conflict on your team, but also when people call out. How do you manage, or people ask for certain days off? Are you using the same criteria with everybody? And it may not seem like you're being fair because somebody may have a health issue, which HR has just said, hey, they have an issue. You're going to have to be able to let them off every Tuesday and Thursday between 2 and 3:30. And the rest of the team is upset. So then what do you need to do to kind of mitigate those feelings of unfairness within that team? And so you really have to be more a focus on your people, and so they can get the work done, and less focus on how you may look to them. Just really, what do you need to do to help them? And lastly, is really releasing being an individual contributor. Just this is generally where we get the pain. You weren't trained to manage. You were barely trained to do your job and you figured out how to do it. But what do you really need to do in order to be an effective and impactful manager? Do not look at your employees as competition, but you want to grow your employees because when they grow, you grow. So making sure they have the tools or the best tools possible and resources to do their jobs, and really going to bat for them overall, and sometimes letting them see you going to bat for them. Some people are like, well, I didn't know you did that until after things were done. Like, well, tell them like, yeah, I want to talk to the VP. They're not willing to fund this. So I'm going to see if I can get some money from three other departments and see if we can at least come up with some money to get this training done. Because when people know you're working for their best interests, they're willing to work with you. And oftentimes as a new manager, a mid manager, you're still trying to do some of the role. And so that's what I would say for middle managers. Don't care at all.
Yeah, that's really great advice. In the book, as I was researching around, you know, what are some of those pitfalls for like the first time manager, or the mid-level manager, and it's really trying to move away from that, you know, doer to delegator mindset and behavior. And I think the statistics were around like, you know, 26% in some cases didn't feel like they got any training to be managers. And, you know, that number goes higher depending on the industry. And so there's really an opportunity here of, as we think about creating equitable environments, inclusive environments, like let's look at how we're making these decisions around who gets promoted into leadership and then what support do they need. I think the the old mindset of like fake it till you make it or you'll figure it out. Like it didn't work then, and it's certainly not going to work now, because the visibility and the impact of, you know, one or two or a subset of managers who are ill-trained, if you will, is huge. It's huge from a customer perspective. It's huge from a branding perspective, and certainly we'll hit the stakeholder lens as well. So thank you so much for sharing that. So a couple of things right quick before we leave. I know you have a webinar that you'll be doing soon. So I definitely want to learn a little bit more about that for those who might be interested in registering and learning more about you, the work of your company.
Okay, great. So Positive Hire, we build community really around women, Black, Latina, and Indigenous in science, tech, engineering, math, data. And what we started pre-pandemic was virtual summits back in 2017, because it fit the lifestyle of women who carry so much throughout not only the workplace, but their families and communities. Well, we've also branched out to hosting diversity, equity, inclusion virtual summits. And we have one coming up, Building Sustainable Diversity, Equity, Inclusion in Engineering and Construction. As we have seen climate change really impacting the world around us, more storms, more intense storms, more rain, hotter this year than it has been, we have to really focus on understanding we're going to have a huge decline of shortage of 600,000 engineers by 2027 and 2.3 million skilled workers for the engineering construction industry. In order to help fill some of that gap, organizations have to become more diverse, equitable, and inclusive in order not only to retain the talent like me that has been there since, I don't know, the early 2000s, but also being able to, like you said earlier, bring in Gen Z. And they aren't doing the work. And Gen Alpha is the FAFO, generation. So they are very hyper-focused on this. And so we're literally talking about this year is sustainable DEI within organizations. So we're going to start kicking it off by talking about the impact of the affirmative action repeal in higher education, really understanding the power of employee resource groups. Too often you're taught, oh, well, those are just clubs. It's not a club. And so really understanding the power of ERGs that organizations don't know how to include inside of the 10K report to say, hey, this is really tied to our ability to retain our talent. This is tied to our ability to train our diverse talent, and really just talk more about that more succinctly. Then we'll talk about some other things about how as engineers, we really are impacting DEI on a different level. As a civil, I can design something that's more equitable, people in wheelchairs, people that are vision impaired, and really clean water. And people don't think about how clean water and water in Black neighborhoods, Hispanic, Latino neighborhoods can be worse off and last to repair. We think Flint made major news, but it's happening all throughout the U.S. And so really just talking about what does DEI look like as an engineer and a scientist, technology professionals on a daily basis, but also how organizations need to be tying it in and how to make it more sustainable in organizations and in the industries overall. So that's what we're working on. I'll drop the information. It's free. It's one day, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So come hang out with us. And we even give you a lunch break. So you can go do some work and respond to your emails and then jump back on and hang out with us.
Awesome. And so I'm seeing in the background there, it's Tuesday, September 26th. September 26th. Okay, awesome. And we'll be sure to include that link in the show notes as well. Michelle, thank you so much. You're the first person that I'm doing this re-lead her ship in action thing as a result of the follow-up to the book. So Michelle was one of the original contributors, if you will, to the Lead Her Ship Reloaded series on the podcast, where she shared many, many, many gems. So be sure to go back and look at her episode. I believe you were episode 63. I just had it up. 66. So Michelle is episode 66. We'll be sharing this on the podcast as well, as along with all of her links. And so I want to share this again. It's in the book, but I want to say it out loud because This is a powerful legacy. I did share the legacies that every guest shared, and your legacy, your desired legacy, is to be remembered as a person who dismantled gender bias and stereotypes. And you are definitely doing that work and inching towards to keeping that narrative alive. So thank you for the trailblazing, the pioneering, the building, the rebuilding, and all of the things that you're doing, both figuratively and in real life, to help support and to dismantle some of these barriers that exist for us across society.
Love. And thank you so much. I'm excited about the book. I can't wait to get my hands on it. So everybody, be sure you're getting your copy too. This is going to be great.
Yes, now available on Amazon in paperback and Kindle. So with that, thank you. We will be back next week. The series will run through the end of fall. So if you have questions, if you have ahas, reach out to Michelle directly. Always feel free to reach out to me as well. With that, I will leave you. Have a wonderful rest of the day, and we will talk next week. Take care. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of She Leads Now. If you found today's episode helpful or got a piece of insight that you plan to implement in your business or organization, I would love to hear from you. Connect with me on LinkedIn at Sabine Gideon, that's my handle, and send me a private message, or feel free to go ahead and leave a review on either Apple or Spotify. I also invite you to share this episode with anyone in your network who you think might benefit from this content. Lastly, be sure to check the show notes and the description below for links to resources, including relevant downloads, articles, and any upcoming training. Until we chat again, have a blessed and powerful week.